Welcome to Brave Together podcast here on UK Health Radio, an empowering resource for the parents of children with disabilities, neurodivergence, and all unique needs.
One of the things that makes poverty worse in families is that one parent is going to be not working full time because of the lack of, you know, structural support for caregivers in this country. It's easy to be in poverty. It's easy to stay in poverty. It's easier to get it. Like, the data shows that it takes longer to overcome it. And maybe they never do when there's been a blip that's caused extra expense for the family at a certain time.
Hello, Bravies. I am your host for this episode, Susanna Peace Lavelle, author, life coach, and advocate for disability families. And I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Jessica Pate, Brave Mom and founder of the nonprofit We Are Brave Together. On today's expert episode, we are joined by Lori Magulak, an advocate and expert focused on supporting caregivers navigating the financial realities of raising children with disabilities. Many families in our community know firsthand that caregiving responsibilities can bring significant financial strain. In this conversation, Lori helps us unpack the complex intersection of caregiving, poverty, public assistance programs, and the resources that do exist to support families, many of which remain underutilized simply because people don't know they're available. Jessica and I talk with Lori about the systemic challenges caregivers face, including the long-term financial impact of caregiving, the barriers families encounter when seeking public assistance, and the stigma that can prevent people from asking for help. Lori also shares insights on resources available to caregivers, including support for student parents and families navigating disability services, and highlights the importance of community support, advocacy, and policy change. This episode is both eye-opening and empowering, reminding caregivers that financial struggle is not a personal failure, and that there are resources, communities, and advocates working toward better systems of support. Just a quick reminder, as always, to rate and review this podcast, share episodes with your friends, follow us on social media, check out our episodes weekly on our We Are Brave Together YouTube channel. And now, please enjoy this super informative conversation with Lori Magulak.
Hi, everyone. Susanna and I are just so excited to be with Lori because we do know her personally. She is one of our leaders for many, many years. She's been in many leadership capacities with We Are Brave, and she's also been a retreat speaker. She is a social worker, and she is a wealth of knowledge, personal, professional, all of it. And we just absolutely love her dearly. So yeah, I think we're a little bit giddy over here just to have this time together because we don't get to see each other in real life enough.
So true.
Yeah. And also too, she is our wonderful connection circle leader for our Moms of Teens support group. And I think that is, in and of itself, its own unique need. Okay. So thank you.
Yeah. I love doing it. It's been a good group. We talk about a lot of things that don't always come up in various other places. So
thank you for meeting that need, Lori. Where should we begin today?
Well, you initially reached out about the concerns that people have with increasing financial challenges, raising kids with disabilities and children into their adult years with disabilities. And so because of the work that I do and my day job, my night job being my four kids, two of whom also are my social work people because I case manage for them and been doing that for 24 years. So, but during the day, I'm also working with folks who are, tend to be 2.5 times, more likely to be in poverty as a family. And so it's a place that I'm steeped in a lot. And so we're here to talk about what kinds of resources we have and what are some of the struggles that folks are having.
Tell our listeners, Lori, what your position is at UCSD.
Yeah, so I work as a case manager in student affairs, and that allows me to be able to engage with students from first day they walk on campus all the way through PhD and professional school programs, medical school, pharmacy school, business school. And there, the students, they reach out to us or people reach out on their behalf to get together with them and work on things that are making it hard for them to like integrate pieces of their lives. They've gone through a loss, they've had a death in the family, they've had a mental health crisis, or an immigration crisis. We've had a lot of those going on in the last year with student visas and, you know, just the extra wraparound support for them so that they can succeed. And my particular role, I was the Students with Dependents Coordinator when that position existed, and basically built up a program from some very beautiful beginnings to a much more robust campus-wide awareness sort of campaign for the student parents and caregivers. A fifth of apparently the students in the U.S. in higher ed are parents. And so there's a lot of higher needs that you see there just in terms of what it costs to attend school while you have people that you're caring for. And a number of my students have been, you know, student parent caregivers for kiddos with disabilities. So.
And are these programs across the United States, like the one that you just described?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. It's like the best kept secret in the world. And yet the best way for people to like have economic mobility, however people may feel about higher ed, it still is the best pathway to an increased income over the lifespan and also improves quality of life and economic mobility for the kids, even if they don't go to college. It just starts them out at a better space. And so we have a lot of good programs in the community colleges, loads of students that are there going back, doing part-time, doing it in the evening after work. And I work with students who've been doing part-time education for 10 years before they come for their last 2 years at UCSD to finish their degree because they're raising kids, you know, and they have families and jobs. So there's a lot in community colleges. The Cal State universities have good programs. The UCs here in California have really good programs. Some of them at Berkeley and UCLA are incredible in terms of providing multiple affordable and accessible childcare options, which is the number one need for a lot of student parents. It's not a huge population that we serve, and so it's constantly an awareness issue, getting out the word.
Well, I was just thinking, and I had the same question as you, Jessica, because I'm thinking, what a phenomenal offering. And then to be connected with the magical saint who is you, Lori, I'm not kidding you. Like every time I am with you or in exchange of energy with you, you just have this calming, just way about you, just calming. I'm here. You just automatically feel safe in your presence. At least I'm speaking for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious then, how do people find you? Like a day in the life of someone who has a need and how they are connected to you specifically based on said need. Do they have to start initiate and start asking for help in some capacity? What does that look like?
It comes from a lot of different areas. The program is newer at my campus. It's been around in some form, very part-time at first for a couple of years, and then almost 3 years of a full-time person in that capacity, taking care of the program and reaching out to people. And so they'll come in through like a dean of student affairs, a professor can let us know, you know, at our department that they have a concern about a student based on, you know, they're just not showing up as much to class. They are having a lot of, they look different. Their countenance is down. Their hygiene is off. Their mood is off. They're irritable with classmates. You know, something like that gives an indication of some level of disruption in the student's life. Or, and in a lot of cases, this happens, the students will directly approach the professors because there's not like a campus-wide system for how to work with student parents. Like when their kids are out from school because they're sick, you know, like there's not really a process on campus for how to deal with those kinds of absences. Those are the kinds of things that I work with in terms of policy and awareness on campus is, and I have a team actually that we just have been a part of a statewide coalition community of practice to develop like campus-wide process and data collection and outreach and awareness for student parents. But yeah, they'll come in through community centers, student orgs.
I'm so grateful that this program exists, and I just hope that all state universities across the country offer something like this so that education is possible.
Yeah, I do too. There's a lot of great places around the country. I'm connected with some national networks and some really, really beautiful innovation going in for students. Housing developments, you know, daycare providers, disability care for kids of the students. Yeah, there's people have all their different flavors of it around the country.
That's fantastic to hear. So, you know, we had a request for, you know, bringing awareness to caregivers who are living in poverty, who are so financially strapped. And I so appreciate this person's really courage to speak up, not anonymously, and say, you know, I'd like to see this talked about. I'd like to see this on the podcast. We all know how hard parenting is. We all know how hard caregiving on top of parenting is. And then to have to worry about food, clothing, and shelter on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, it kills me and it breaks my heart. And I know there's some resources, but there's not enough resources, as we know, in the disability community. And so we're going to speak to that. We're going to acknowledge that. When I talk about and give permission to moms or parents to use respite services or to take breaks, to be able to attend a connection circle or a weekend retreat that we offer, I know that most people in the disability community do not have extra dollars to just go and hire somebody because there's nobody available through the agency, or they live in a state where no respite hours are even offered to families like ours. I don't know. It hurts my heart because I know that everyone is suffering from burnout. And one of the reasons is the financial stress and strain and never being able to take a break from caretaking.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, you said most are financially struggling. That's probably true to some degree. They're definitely, nobody's life looks the same for sure once we have caretaking responsibilities, and they last the rest of our kids' lives. So it's not like it's a short-term blip that we can overcome. Mm-hmm. And I did some reading and some research on kind of what are the statistics for our country and the world in general of like the trends of poverty. There's two different ways of talking about it that you see. And one of them is poverty, which is typically tied to like that national poverty line that's indicated by their financial institutions in the country. And then there's the other one, which is economic hardship, which is a little more like waffly and doesn't have as much of a definition. But in our country, they define that as 150% of the poverty line income for the family. We have like between 25 and 40% of people in the disability caretaking community that have are in economic hardship or poverty, about 25% at the poverty line. And so we're looking at people who are dependent on, you know, SNAP benefits, on Medicaid and whatever it is called in the state where people are living. They're dependent on potentially cash aid. There's a block grant from the federal government called TANF, and it is a 5 total years of access to help in the lifetime of that person, which obviously is going to cut short in terms of helping with a family that has a lifelong caretaking responsibility. So the TANF block grants. So for us in California, that's called CalWORKs. Mm-hmm. And that's for families of kids who are young, like 5 and under, at least one of the kids. And it can give, you know, it's called temporary assistance to needy families. So it's temporary. Mm-hmm. It's a total of 5 years over the lifetime of that individual. And it is, you know, can give like a boost with housing expenses, but that's not a constant thing. There's cash aid involved that can assist with some of the, you know, hiring a babysitter or something like that. And there is a child care stipend that's usable at many different places, but not all for childcare. And of course, you know, we have specific childcare needs for young kids, especially first five, you know, and early detection for a lot of these, you know, genetic and developmental concerns that families, kids have. That just limits the pool even further, you know. Fortunately, there are some programs like federally, like Head Start, which has been around for, I think, 60 years. And fortunately, their funding was renewed in the appropriations package recently in Congress. Yes. So that serves like hundreds of thousands of kids. And they have the capability and the training to work with kids with disabilities of all kinds. And they also do wraparound programs there where folks who are eligible for Medi-Cal that at that sort of 150% of poverty line, they would be able to qualify for that program. And there's a case manager there that kind of helps with like dental and optical and, you know, vaccines and, you know, public health related things and parenting health and nutrition and, you know, all these kinds of things. So this, it's a really great program for folks who have access to it. And, you know, not every community has that available to them. So, you know, people would have sometimes to travel to like a larger city to access that program.
We are going to take a brief break. Stay with us.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, brave friends.
Well, there's just, it's, there's so many things, there's so many layers. And then you throw in a particular like circumstance, like that, that impacts the economic, you know, level, right? So then you have something like COVID or you have an event where, you know, you are unable to get pension because of whatever, fill in the blank, you know, political and government shifts and changes. I wish we could just create a roadmap for every single family. And I know everyone has a different situation and circumstance, but is there a one-stop shop that you can start, you know, in your state? And I know we're talking about some things that are specific to California right now, and they might be called different things in other states, but is there a way for us to guide somebody who's listening right now, who is in desperate need to even just begin to where to start, like, where do we even go?
Yeah. And I think the best place to start is to, we have something called 211 in California, and 211 San Diego is the one that people use in my county. So if there is a, like a community information and helpline, that is typically a great place to start because they will be connected with public benefits programs, like in California, the CalWORKs, you know, CalFresh, which is our SNAP benefits, or Medi-Cal. They also would be able to, you know, connect people with their local developmental services offices in their city, their county, in the state. You know, you can start in the state and then go down where, you know, and get more granular towards the local area. The actually people get scared of like child welfare organizations and agencies. And that's so reasonable because a lot of times people who have kids, especially with like developmental delays or high needs of some kind that isn't physically visible on the child, will typically, you know, have a higher rate of getting involved in the child welfare or child protective types of situations. It can feel very punishing. Poverty is very criminalized in our country. And there's a big overlap for poverty and people of color. And so there is a very valid fear there, but they can be reached out to for lots of referrals to places. And so, you know, contacting the local health and human services and the child welfare divisions, they're increasingly trying to be well-being supporters there, not just the punitive side of it, which is scary. So, it's those local agencies, those civic offices, those, you know, public developmental services type offices are a good place to start.
Great.
Another good place to check in if the child has mental health related disabilities, you know, that compound any other kind of disabilities that they have, like suicide helplines, the 988 warm line where they'll sit and talk, you know, with people in California. I think 988 is nationwide, actually. And that connects to a lot of local services as well. So it doesn't have to just be a mental health crisis. You know, you can call in and say, you know, we've got a big concern. These are kind of the symptoms we're looking at. And like they can connect people too.
So I have a question too, because not everyone has access to a phone.
Right.
So there aren't, you know, we used to have phone booths up and down the street when we were younger. But is there a place that someone is like, can someone go into a public place like a library or a civic center?
Most, if not all, at least the ones in our area have at hospitals have social workers who help with community referrals.
Okay.
So, you know, for folks whose kiddos have been in the hospital recently, and even if not, you know, calling up and finding out, talking to somebody who's like a care navigator or a social worker in the hospital can help. The other thing that can be really helpful, because I know hospitals can be intimidating as well and really sources of trauma for a lot of us based on history, is the community health center networks. So like in California, we have a pretty robust, like a family health centers type of thing. In San Diego, it's actually called family health centers, and there's multiple locations, and people typically will know where that is in their community because they specifically try to get those into communities where poverty is a higher and a more frequent issue. And they have care navigators there as well who can provide referrals, get people signed up for Medi-Cal, SNAP benefits, and all that kind of thing.
Lori, do you feel like sharing any of your personal story today? Because I know that we have moms listening who are in very difficult, precarious situations, and leaving could leave them in poverty, right? They want to leave certain situations that are difficult or horrific at worst, right? But the fear of leaving, especially if you have a child with any type of disability, is, you know, compounded by the fear of no financial support and starting over, starting from scratch. What courage would you give that mom who is in that situation?
That, unfortunately, is more common than we would want in our society. And there's a lot of contributing factors to that. So poverty itself is disabling for families and leads to exacerbated behaviors in individuals. And sometimes that leads to abuse of the family. And if that is the case, safety is preferable to that extra few dollars, you know, it really is. And there are, so like our district attorney has an agency that helps and has, it's called One Safe Place. And it is in North County. And we also have a South County version called Your Safe Place. And it is a clearinghouse of agencies under one roof so that folks can go and consult and look at their options. Mm. If a restraining order is needed, they can file that. The sheriff and the local police are there. Mm-hmm. They can talk with somebody about, you know, preparing for a restraining order hearing. Mm-hmm. They can talk to regional center reps if their kids are not already a part of a regional center. Okay. Oh, that's another good place to ask for poverty, like mitigation type of resources too. I was talking to my husband about this last night. I'm remarried now, but I was married to someone else for almost 17 years. And we have four kids. Our older two are adopted and former foster youth. So they had a lot of really complicated intersecting kind of disabilities, one of which was having been foster kids, you know, which made it really hard. They were already system engaged when we got them. There was already justice involvement for their birth parents. There was a lot of trauma and a lot of bias in the, you know, in the work with providers, doctors, everything. So, you know, where all of us need to work really hard to convince other people what's going on as the experts in our children's lives. You know, when you have the foster care component, there's that additional piece of not trusting foster parents because of unfortunate stories in the news. And so there's lack of credibility going in that on top of being female in these situations and also having a kid who may have a zebra kind of disability, you know? So it just takes a lot longer. That's how I actually got interested in social work, was because I was a case manager for these two of mine, my older two, for a long time, and really saw some areas that could be better in this, you know. Mm-hmm. One of the things that makes poverty worse in families is that one parent is going to be not working full time because of the lack of, you know, structural support for caregivers in this country. It's easy to be in poverty. It's easy to stay in poverty. It's easier to get it. Like the data shows that it takes longer to overcome it. And maybe they never do when there's been a blip that's caused extra expense for the family at a certain time. All of those happened for us. I had, you know, I wasn't able to be a teacher because what I made as a teacher was less than what I would need to pay for the care for the kids just for after school so I could grade papers and do lessons. Mm-hmm. I had to leave my career, and that, of course, puts a strain on a marriage. And poverty causes a lot of bad behavior sometimes, and that led to abusive tendencies in that first marriage and was just a really, really destructive cocktail. And at one point, you know, facing some health crises of my own, which comes from us not having that time to take care of ourselves, like stress-induced kinds of, you know, long-term chronic things that come up. I had a cancer scare in 2014, and that was sort of the catalyst that showed that there was not support there, and it was actually going to be pretty damaging to stay. So I did. I made the jump, and it was terrifying. And people who cared about our family most told me not to do it because they didn't know how I was going to make it. It was really hard. It was a very sleepless time, but it was safer than being in that other environment. And I had I had a huge gap in my career. So I wasn't able to find anything above minimum wage at first, and was on, you know, food and medical and public benefits and utility benefits. Like there's, you know, reduced utility rates for various income levels. And it was pretty scary. And, you know, you work in a job that doesn't have paid time off. So anytime you're not there for some reason, which happens a lot, you just don't get paid. So it is a scary situation, certainly, but safety is worth it.
Mm. Yeah. I'm so proud of you. God.
That's beautiful.
Admire you so much, Lori. Admire you, respect you, trust you. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're pretty remarkable.
I hope anyone who's listening is inspired. And there are so many levels of abuse in relationships. You know, it can be mental. That counts. It could be emotional. It could be financial. It could be coercive control. All of those count alongside, you know, infidelity and physical abuse. All of those things are happening inside caregivers' lives.
Stay with us, Bravies. We'll be right back.
There is a moment most caregiving mothers remember with startling clarity. The moment before and the moment after. Before the diagnosis, before the phone call, before the doctor walked into the room. That invisible threshold that divides a life into two distinct halves, and on the other side, a version of yourself you never auditioned for, doing things you never imagined you could do. You have been suddenly thrust into altered motherhood. Bravies, our second book is here. Suddenly Brave Together, letters to caregiving mothers at a defining moment in their lives, captures the voices of women who lived that pivotal moment, written from a place of hard-won wisdom, decades in the making. Imagine 30 seasoned, savvy, compassionate moms reaching across the universe to share their stories, their transformations, and everything they wish someone had told them. This is not just a book. It is an open door, a reminder that somewhere in this wide world, there is a mother who has already walked the road you are on, and she is holding out her hand for you. Written with new and newer caregiving moms at heart, Suddenly Brave Together will validate and inspire every parent caregiver who picks it up. Grab your copy today. The link is in the show notes.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Brave Together podcast.
Yeah, and really it was primarily the coercive controlling abuse, you know, just the patterns of power and control and the restrictions on, you know, what I was able to do. And if I could, you know, if I wanted to take time for myself and like go to a women's group somewhere, you know, the kids would be in absolute disarray by the time I would get back, and it would make me not want to do it again because the cost was too high. You know, it actually was so much more peaceful not having to deal with like retaliation for caring for myself. That was worth it for me, you know, and it's different for everybody. And that's another reason to reach out, you know, for resources and do some, a little bit of homework, you know, if it's safe to do that. I know sometimes people have to cover their tracks and they're being watched on their internet, you know, and a lot of controlling behaviors like that. So it's scary and it takes some time and usually an ally, a friend who cares, you know, to help you.
Mm-hmm. Lori, I'm sure you have lots of answers that may not be possible to implement, and maybe they will someday. I don't know. But seeing all that you've seen and everything that you've experienced, what are some things, like, if I could change this and implement this and have financial resource for this, whatever that is, a program, something, what are some areas, like, if you could dream big, this is a hole that I would plug. This is a hole that I would plug. This is a hole that I would plug. What do you think about? What do you dream about? What do you sit up at night overthinking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm glad that in my role, I get to do a little of that on the clock. And, you know, there are folks working nationally, you know, in our national legislature on behalf of the UCs for our university system. And they do advocate for, like, for example, we used to have a federal child care grant that paid the full cost of care at a place that was very much like Head Start, had highly trained early childhood educators, all kinds of wraparound care, was right on campus in family housing on campus. So like didn't have that hour long bus ride on each end of the taking and picking up that happens.
Wow.
And then, you know, policy shifted with a new administration, and it, we lost it like in the middle of the grant with more to be paid out to us. So we had to retool. The students found that out at the beginning of the school year. Some of them I had helped recruit because we had that program, you know, at events that I'd done, and they'd moved their families, you know, to the campus, and then found out that they basically had to have double their amount that they have for rent every month to pay for care so they could attend class. So I would wave a magic wand and grow the funding for the C-Campus program for student mm-hmm. parents. Mm-hmm. I would go talk to the gal in New Mexico who just implemented universal childcare and funded it through the state so that federal, you know, changes of the wind don't impact it as much.
Yes, yes.
I would not, I would expand Medicaid coverage so that it doesn't just hit you right at the point where you're at 150% or lower of the poverty line, because you need that bridge mm-hmm. from that level of income to like more than the benefits to be able to get off the benefits and have a good quality of life, you know?
Right.
People often will blame users of benefits for that problem, but that is not a problem with them. That is a problem structurally with the system that mm-hmm. is not allowing people to get off of those benefits, not that the benefits themselves are bad or that poverty is a crime or a character flaw. So yeah, I mean, I think I would do a big public awareness campaign, you know, mm-hmm. about what it's like, and share the successes, share, you know, when I talk to people to try and bring up more funding for the program with the student parents at our campus, I talk about what makes them great, like mm-hmm. how resilient they are, how much mm-hmm. the students are dedicated to their, you know, academics, you know, statistically more than their non-parenting peers. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think that we would need to shift public opinion. So yeah, I would do like a nationwide campaign to shift public opinion on that, grow mm-hmm. the benefits, universal childcare. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you were saying at the beginning of our conversation, it's like this should not be, you know, some of the offerings, how you are supporting students at UC San Diego, should not be a best kept secret, right? It's so frustrating. I mean, I wish we knew everything, all things, all the time for, you know, all of the needs that we can share as resources to others. I mean, I'm sitting here feeling like so helpless in terms of being, you know, and I am a, you know, as you know, all of us sitting here, the three of us, we are so of service, you know, that is just a part of our countenance. And we just, you know, share and share and share and share and mm-hmm. spread the word. And I'm just wondering how else can we help? I mean, obviously this conversation is a great mm-hmm. Great eye opener. And mm-hmm. I just wish there was more that we can do.
And I think it takes partnering with people who are also doing the work, right? You know, and I know Jessica and Susanna, in the work that you do with We Are Brave Together, there are other agencies making these resources more prominent in the discussion that aren't related to disability. So mm-hmm. like Reshma Saujani's Moms First organization, who's up in the faces of the congressional reps, you know, and constantly bringing child independent care to the forefront of the conversation, and family leave, you know, I mean, wow, wouldn't that be nice to have like right. family leave that you don't have to not be paid for our 19-year-olds, you know, disabilities or surgeries that yeah. no longer count, you know, and stuff yeah. like that. So I don't know. I mean, I think part of it is leveraging the groups that are already doing the work mm-hmm. and making connections and like what you're doing, hosting conversations that bring people together and like create ideas and opportunity.
I wish there was an AI tool, an app.
Yes.
For every single state in the country and for every country. Let's just think big, you know, where somebody could plug in and they are looking for social services, supports, and resources for their county, for their state specifically. There has to be something. Somebody has to be creating something like this. Like that's using AI at its best, really helping people and also teaching them how to navigate those services. Because great, to be given a list of things to do and places to contact, yes, that is incredibly helpful. But please give me the insider tips on how, what to know. This will be a 10-page form. And on the second page, you're going to see this question and you're going to get completely stumped. Don't give up, because this is the interpretation of what that means. Right?
That's great, yes. I think everybody, once you get a diagnosis, should have a case manager. You know, yes. like in the Netherlands, where everybody is born and their joke is they're born with a bicycle, you know.
Yeah. Honestly, Jessica, I don't think we're that far off, because, mm-hmm. you know, agentic AI is sort of taking over in terms of like creating all of these agents that can go out and be your little soldiers in the field. Mm-hmm. I play around with it all the time. I work, you know, I do all kinds of fun prompt engineering as it relates to Arizona's now transition into adult services, you know what I mean? Mm. And then I bring those up in meetings and budget planning and all sorts of things. But I just wish for the health and the wellness and the wholeness of families everywhere on this earth. And I absolutely believe this is all of our birthrights, you know, just by being human beings. And so I think of how important this conversation is. And to me, I just, my compassion limit is feels limitless, but it's expanding even more and more. You know, we just never know what is going on with families. And I could talk about this all day. I think it is so phenomenal. I just love your entire journey, Lori, of like identifying, you know, being the person and identifying the need, becoming an expanded version of yourself in terms of your life and your living and your work, everything inspiring, you know, each other. It's because it can be like a vicious cycle once we get stuck into this rut of like need and then more need. And then you become so entrenched that you're like, I can't do this anymore, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, it does. And I think that that's where the joy and the huge value of like We Are Brave Together as an organization exists, because you really do need a buddy to be able to take that next step, mm-hmm. especially if there is an abuse component, you know, because of and compounded by the poverty component. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the community that happens here, and maybe that becomes like an arm, I don't know, of We Are Brave, like kind of a, you know, we're here for you. Like, mm-hmm. like we have got a helpline, or I don't know what's possible, what the resources.
Yeah, you know, I really think there should be a caregiver hotline. Yeah. Helpline.
We've been talking about this for a while.
Really?
I know, because we know there's such a need.
Yeah.
That's why. It's a very unmet need.
And I just want anyone who's listening who is in a really tough financial situation, and you hear our hearts and you hear our compassion, you might be saying, that's really nice, but I need more people making a difference. I think just by having these conversations, there are people who listen in, and, you know, our podcast is far-reaching, especially with, you know, being added to UK Health Radio. There are more people listening to what's going on with caregivers. And my hope is that people who can legislate, who can advocate, who can go to state capitals in DC and all of that, and whatever that is in other countries, I just hope that people are moved into action, because yes, there are a million things I would love to do with We Are Brave Together, and we won't be able to. It's a fact. We won't be able to do everything we want to do and address every need that is out there, but we do care, and we do want to connect you to other people who are way savvier and smarter than me, like Lori, our guest, and try to connect you to resources. Just please know that we see you and we care so deeply.
Yeah, I agree with that. To all who are listening, it's not as scary as you think to pitch legislation.
Okay.
So I don't know. Okay. Maybe it's a follow-up.
Okay.
I can help. Like, look at voting histories and take a look at what's been going on and who might be a good, you know, sponsor for something.
Okay.
Great. We just need
right. I wouldn't even have known that. Yes.
Every bill that's out there, somebody like us sitting and thinking, we need this, you know?
Lori, is there anything that you want to share? Anything that you want to say from your research and your experience to our listeners before we go today?
We say it a lot in various capacities, but if a listener is really struggling with poverty right now, it is nothing to be ashamed of. It is almost impossible to get away from as a parent, caretaking for somebody else for their lifetime. It's not a character flaw. There are resources to help. Turn off the TV when public policy is not speaking nicely about your needs. Mm-hmm. And know that people are around who want to help.
Thank you. Thank you. And Lori, if anybody wants to reach out to you or find you, do you have your own website currently?
I do, but I haven't actually done anything with it because I was I was one of those moms who went back to school and was a student with dependents.
Yes, I know.
Yes.
We'll just remind you that our email is hello@wearebravetogether.org. So if you ever have any inquiries, really, about anything that we can be helpful, please send an email in.
Yeah. And in subject line, you know, question for policy or social services.
Right. Yeah. Susanna, anything before we go?
No, just endless gratitude for your work and your being in this world with us. It for sure is a better place because of your advocacy and energy. I can't emphasize that enough. I just see you as this steady, forward-moving powerhouse that is nurturing and cherishing at the same time. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Ditto.
All right. As always, Bravies, please know we see you and we love you.
Thanks so much for listening today on UK Health Radio. Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization, We Are Brave Together. We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms, offering support groups that are virtual and in-person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood awaits you. Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only. It's not a substitute for professional care and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcast, links, show notes, or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns, because we are all beautifully complex and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.